You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by the MLB.com Shop.
Well, welcome in again. MLB.com Extras, American League West edition, where this week we learned that the Rangers cannot run away with the division. The Angels can't seem to shake that 500 mark. Seattle can't get the offense going without Nelson Cruz. We've got ambidextrous pitchers and a whole lot more, and it's all included in this week's American League West edition. B-Tag, let's start with the most forefront issue, and that is Carlos Correa. What's been your impression so far with six games into his big league career?
Well, I've been very impressed. I mean, he looks very comfortable in the surroundings. He looks under control. He's not pressing too hard. I mean, if you remember when Singleton came up last year, and even Springer last year, really looked like they were trying to swing out of their shoes and pressing too hard. And they both said they had to slow the game down. And that hasn't seemed like that's an issue for Carlos. I mean, he's come up despite all the hoopla and the attention and his entourage and all that. And he's handled everything very well and got off to a nice start and got the first hit and first homer out of the way and came home. And there was more hoopla and had another nice game. So I think he's settled in very nicely. And, I think he's going to continue to put up a solid season and put up some nice numbers at the end of the day.
What kind of entourage are we talking about here?
Well, he told me that when he was in Chicago, he said that he had, in Puerto Rico, he has his own hitting coach, has his own defensive coach, his own trainer, his own strength and conditioning coach, and they all came with him to Houston, I think, just temporarily, and they're going to go back. But also he had 30 members of his family with him, too, so that's a lot of people. Most of them were down on the field on Friday trying to soak in the atmosphere. So there were a lot of people in Carlos Correa jerseys.
Man, yeah, that is quite the entourage. Do you remember years ago, by the way, Astros and Yankees, and I can't remember exactly how we all learned it, about A-Rod and that guy who put the belt in his pants every day?
Yeah,
your entourages?
Yeah, I hope it doesn't come to that, but... He's certainly well taken care of. There's no doubt.
Well, that's pretty crazy stuff. Now, speaking of crazy stuff, you and my good friend Greg Johns had the pleasure this last weekend of spending time together and watching an almost unthinkable series, Mariners Astros, going back and forth, alternating days where kind of unthinkable things were happening. The Astros put the worst whooping on King Felix and his career, then turn around and just get it handed right back to him, and then five no-hit innings by the youngster and another 13-0 whitewash. I mean, it's almost like watching a great tennis match or something, and everybody was serving aces.
Yeah, that's a good analogy. It was like, it was three blowouts and then the team getting blown out. You were like, why are these guys even here? They didn't even look like they wanted to compete or Friday night when they scored eight runs in the first inning off Felix, that was mind-boggling. I mean, he's just like, is this really happening? And then when Castro hit the home run to make it 8-0, you're like, I might have witnessed history here. I mean, to me, that was more impressive than a pitcher throwing a no-hitter was scoring eight runs against King Felix. And he only recorded one out, and then they came back the next day and gave up five in the first inning and weren't competitive. And then the Colors throws the five no-hit innings, and they win 13-0. I've never seen such swings like that before, but you know what? That's kind of the Astros. They're sort of all or nothing, especially lately. I mean, if they're not hitting the home runs like they did off Felix, they hit two in that game. They hit a couple last night. If they're not hitting the home runs, it's tough to watch them offensively.
Well, yeah. Are you feeling any less confident about this team's season now? They went through the stretch. They're the losing streak. It was such kind of a hot and cold weekend against the Mariners, but there was at least you saw some of the hot again, I guess. Altuve hasn't played well now for a rather long stretch. He's hurt. Any concerns now as we inch closer to that All-Star break?
Yeah, I think they have to have concerns. I think offensively we knew they had some holes, and I think they've really come to light here lately in that they're relying more on the home run, I think, than they were in the past. If Altuve's not hitting, that makes it really, really tough. And so, we've talked about before, are they going to go out at the trade deadline and get a pitcher? I think that's a given that they need to try to get a starting pitcher. But you know, right now their offense, I think, is almost as big of a concern. They could use a high on-base percentage guy who can hit the ball in the gap, doesn't strike out. That might be as big a need right now as a starting pitcher. So they're not a team without issues, and I don't think we thought when they had a 6.5 game lead they were going to cakewalk to this thing, and everyone behind them has issues as well. But, I think offensively they have to be really concerned about the way they look right now and how much they are relying on the home runs.
Well, you know, with the Altuve injury, is there any correlation, do you suppose, to his performance? I mean, the last like month, basically, he's getting on base at around a 250 clip, and that's just not Jose Altuve-like. I don't have to tell you that, but, is there any thinking that maybe he's been kind of working through something here and the Mets been hampering him now for the better part of a month?
Well, he said the injury didn't come up until the other night when he hit the base a little funny, so, you know, you take his word on that, but I think as far as what's going on with him at the plate, he's just swinging at pitches that he shouldn't be swinging at. I think he's trying to press a little too hard. I mean, you know, the team for 2 or 3 weeks now has been playing 500, maybe a little bit below, and Altuve wants to win more than anybody. So I think he's pressing a little bit and swinging at pitches out of the zone that we have not used to see him swing at. He's expanding his zone a little bit. So I don't think it's a health thing. I just think you got to credit to the pitchers. I think people are figuring out a little bit how to pitch him, and now that he's chasing those pitches, they're kind of feasting on that. But I think at the end of the day, Altuve is going to be fine. He's still hitting 290 something. But you're right, the last month the numbers aren't there that we're used to anyway from him.
Yeah. Any news on Jed Lowrie? When he'll be back and B, how they'll use him?
I talked to Jed the other day, and he said till he gets his range of motion back, there are really no updates. And, you know, he's still got a little mini cast on there. So I know the original diagnosis was the All-Star break, but talking to him just the other day, I got the indication that he's not really anywhere close, because once he gets the range of motion back, he's going to have to take BP and do drills and go on a rehab and all that stuff. And as you know, that stuff takes, that can take 7 to 10 days or longer. So, he's still quite a ways away, so I wouldn't expect him back anytime soon at all.
Wow, interesting. Real interesting, because, you know, when you talk about, you know, adding a little something to the offense, I mean, he's certainly the guy who could do it. What about the draft? Anything catch you by surprise with the club this year?
Well, you know, everyone freaks out that they take on the day Correa makes his debut, they take a shortstop with their first pick, and Alex Bregman, and everyone's like, where's he going to play? Well, you know, he's got to get here first. So, I mean, that's a couple of years down the road, and you worry about it at that time. But, I do like the fact that they added some catching depth with a couple of college catchers high up. Of course, they drafted a lot of pitchers. Kyle Tucker, who actually signed today with the number five overall pick, very intriguing guy. Even though he's a high school guy, I think he's one to keep a watch on. He could move for a high school player pretty quickly through the system. I'd say the one I really like is Riley Farrell, who they took in the third round, the closer from TCU. And if you watched the College World Series the other day, TCU LSU, Farrell was just unhittable. And he's the kind of guy, I think, too, that next year he can compete for a bullpen. You're talking about a polished college pitcher, throws 97, 98, got a white-top slider, kind of reminiscent of Brad Lidge. So I think of their top five or so picks, he's the one that, as far as immediate help, I think you get most excited about.
What about, the Astros drafted the young man. He was the National Player of the Year. He was just up the road, I want to say near Conroe, which is about 40 miles from downtown Houston. But the kid was the National Player of the Year. He wrote letters to every team, as I understand it, telling them, please don't bother drafting me. I'm going to college. Astros gave it a try anyway, and I never mind that. I always think that that's worth a flyer sometimes. Did they make any comment about that, their expectations there, maybe why they took that flyer?
Not that I remember. I think it's talking about Lucan Baker, I believe is his name.
Yeah,
in the 38th round. So for a kid who's got a college commitment, a pretty firm one, to go that late in the draft, I mean, he's not going to get any money, so – I think they probably drafted him knowing that they couldn't sign him. I mean, we've seen stuff like this in the past. I know 10 years ago they drafted Troy Patton, who was firmly committed to the University of Texas, I believe it was, and they ended up signing him away from Texas. Now he was drafted in the 9th or 10th round. 38th round is different. So I doubt that they'll even make a run to try to sign him, but stranger things have happened. Of course, they drafted Biggio and Clemens' sons as well, and neither of them are going to sign either, but it was kind of cool to hear those names called.
Yeah, and of course, going back to the Patton case, that was a time and age where you could be a little more freewheeling with how you spent your money in the draft, and nowadays that stuff is so closely legislated. I mean, it's, like you say, Lucan Baker doesn't stand to pick up a big chunk of change in a late 30th round type situation. But all right, well, interesting stuff, B-Tags. Always fun to catch up. Stay dry. I know there's a little more rain coming your way. I don't know if you heard about that, but stay safe.
Well, if we have to evacuate, we're coming to your den, so be careful.
You're welcome anytime, my friend. Where do we find you right now, GR?
I'm in the parking lot of National Rental Car at that enormous mess they call LAX.
Okay. All right. Well, next time maybe Marty Moose will join you or something like that. But get us caught up here on the Rangers playing outstanding baseball. I was looking back, May 20th, the team was 9.5 games out. They were well under 500. They've gone on a run. They're 2.5 back of the Astros. What's the ceiling on this team? I mean, they've turned it around to this point awfully well. Can they run away with this division?
No, they cannot run away with this division. They're getting good starting pitching, Dave. Their starting pitching has been on a great roll. Yovani Gallardo, Wandy Rodriguez, Nick Martinez, they've all pitched well. Colby Lewis. And, of course, Chichi Gonzalez, huge impact coming up from the minor league so far after three starts. And what's really carried this team right now is good starting pitching. You know, they're playing pretty good defense. Their offense is hanging in there. No, they cannot run away with this division, but they certainly can be contenders the whole year.
What would be their biggest concern when it comes to competing in this division then?
Well, keeping everybody healthy. I mean, they keep falling like flies. I mean, huge loss to Lino DeShields. Not so much the production, but the energy and the excitement he brought at the top of the lineup, and just what a great feel-good story that was. A Rule 5 kid ending up as a regular left fielder, leadoff hitter, playing every day, getting a chance to shine, goes down with a hamstring injury. That's just a really, really tough break. And, you know, Hamilton's out, Beltre's out. You know, they're trying to keep everybody healthy. It's been a struggle. It's always been a struggle for this team, but they keep plugging guys in there. Now they got Joey Gallo out playing left field. I'm not sure how long that's going to last, but, they keep plugging guys in left and right.
Speaking of Gallo, and like you say, who knows? Teams do a pretty good job of making adjustments to young players, but 21 years old, he's played a dozen games, and thus far the results have been very good. What about defensively? How has he looked out there in left?
Well, I think he only had one play in his first game. You know, the big thing about Joey Gallo is he's taken a few walks, and that's really pleased the Rangers. You know, when he first got up here, the strikeouts were there, and they're still there on occasion, but they've put down a little bit. But he's drawn some walks, and that's been very impressive for the Rangers. Defensively, I think he's going to be shaky in left field. I mean, you can't sugarcoat that. That's a big gamble putting him out there in the outfield. You can't hide him out there, and we'll see how he does. He's doing okay at third base. Starting to get the hang of it a little bit. This is a guy who can slug the ball and hit the ball into the upper deck, but, at some point he's got to be able to find a position. He's got to be able to kind of adjust to the position and get used to the position. And right now this guy's going to be very questionable defensively until he gets time to acclimate himself to whatever position he's going to play for an extended period of time.
I mean, you mentioned, though, that he's got to be happy the fact that he's been taking some walks, and maybe not a surprise, but the home runs have certainly been there, four of them in a dozen games. No one's going to expect that pace to continue, but have you seen anybody, or have they made many adjustments to him yet? Has he had to make many adjustments yet at the plate?
Oh, it's going to be a constant game of adjustments. I think they've been trying to throw him off a plate down and away, and I think he's learned to lay off that pitch. I think that's the big pitch he's laid off and gotten the walk. So, I'm sure teams will find different ways to pitch him, and he'll have to adjust, and it's going to be that way for a long time.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Mitch Moreland seems to be hitting a stride of some kind, huh?
Oh, Mitch has had a great first half. You know, had the little injury where he had to get his you know, elbow fix, but other than that, he's been doing very well. You know, with Beltre out and with Josh Hamilton out, it was critical that, you know, he fill in right behind Prince Fielder in the lineup, and he's done a tremendous job. Really can't say enough about what Mitch has done offensively and defensively. You know, he's had a lot of injuries over the past 4 years, and everybody wondering what he could do for a full season. He's never really had that chance, and, you know, right now he's been great.
Yeah. Yeah, teams don't always get to, you know, time things out or plan them or I guess roll them out according to their exact plans when we talk about players moving up or down. And Rougned Odor, you know, had to spend a little time back in the minor leagues and make some adjustments. He's back up recently, back up with the team, goes 3-for-3 in his first game back. Were they satisfied with the development and, you know, and the growth that they had seen while he was in the minor leagues?
Well, they talked about how good his defense had improved down there, and that was a big thing that the Rangers wanted to do is work on his defense, work on turning the double play. Offensively, you know, trying not to be so pole-happy. When he was up here, he was just trying to yank everything down the right field line, and I think they got him away from that and, you know, using the strike zone better. So I think they've seen sufficient improvement to think that this guy can really help them. I mean, if this guy still has a chance to be a – offensive second baseman, a guy who produces significantly with the bat.
Yeah. Meanwhile, the pitching, you mentioned it earlier, Gallardo again with a great outing against the Dodgers, and as a group now, so 11 consecutive quality starts. And in terms of Rangers franchise history, is there – anything you can compare this to? Have they been able to dig anything up on that?
Well, I mean, they've had some good pitching staffs in the past. I mean, they went to 2 World Series. But I think what they have right now is 5 good starters. I mean, nobody's great. Nobody's overpowering. Nobody's Chris Sale going out there striking 12 batters a night. You know, but they're pitching 6 or 7 innings, you know, 3 runs or less, obviously. You know, Gallardo's pitched very well. I mean, just night after night, they're just pitching good, solid games for them. And that's been a big boost for this team.
Yeah. Well, kind of switching gears a little bit here, TR. We're just a smidge past 1 week since the draft started last Monday. Rangers already signing up a handful of their top picks. Their second-round pick, Eric Jenkins, their third-round selection. Both of them have signed for a couple $1 million. And I'm guessing that you fall in line with me on this one, which is the tweaks that they have made to this part of the game, moving that signing deadline up, and the fact that we see guys now drafted and signed within a week, getting out and developing and beginning that road to the big league. To me, it is such a massive improvement over the old system where these things dragged out forever and the negotiations were ponderous and guys lost full seasons of development. This is exciting to see these guys sign so quickly and out there working.
Well, I think the system is put in place where they pretty much had no choice. I mean, this is what they're going to get. They know it. They accept it. And, you know, agents were trying to get as much money as they can because then obviously their commissions are bigger. I think now you see guys, here's what you're going to get. Let's go, yes or no. And I think for the most part, players are getting done quickly. And like you said, they're getting out there. You know, one thing is, though, a lot of these kids coming out of high school or colleges, I think they still need that downtime. I don't think you can go out there and play a full season, especially if you're a pitcher. If you're a position player, yeah, you can go out there and get an extra 150 to 200 at bats through the summer. Pitchers, I think you'll get them at the most 4 or 5 starts, 25, 30 innings, and then get them into instructional league.
All right. Well, TR, this team continues to surge, and it looks like you're going to be on quite a little journey here in the next couple of weeks. West Coast, Midwest, Canada, East Coast, back home, thrown in the middle there. You got a lot of traveling to do. We, as always, appreciate the time and look forward to doing it again next week. Who knows where we'll catch you, but we look forward to doing it next week.
Okay, thanks, Dave.
Here we are again. You know, the last couple of weeks, I felt like this team was really taking off. you know, closing ground on the Astros. Look like they, you know, they might be the real threat. And for a little change of pace, I look up, and there are the Angels at 500 again.
Yeah, I mean, they've been they've kind of just been a streaky team all year. You know, there's times where you feel like they're really going to get going. They're going to go on one of these runs like they went on a few times last year. And they'll lose another few more games in a row, and they're back at 500. They were at 500 when they wrapped up on Monday again. It was the 14th time this season they've had a 500 record, which is the most in the American League, which that's no surprise. They've had four different winning streaks of three games or more and four different losing streaks of three games or more. They've just been, you know, they've been pretty much treading water all year, and they just haven't been able to find that spark to kind of take them to another level. And, you know, I hate going back to the same thing, Dave, but I feel like it's what we've been talking about all year, that this team season may very well hinge on what Jerry Dipoto, their GM, can do in the trade market and whether or not he could really find a bat or two for this lineup. I feel like this team is not really going to take off until Dipoto can go out and find a bat. The problem with that is that, you know, it's really bad time for that. You know, parity is more prevalent in the game right now than it ever has been. I think as of right now, the only two teams that are true sellers are the Phillies and Brewers, because everybody else is pretty much a good week away from getting back in the race. And then on top of that, offense has been down significantly this year and last year. So, you know, even if there were a bunch of teams that were sellers, there aren't that many bats to be had right now either. This is a pitching dominant era. The good thing for the Angels is they are at 500. They are very well within striking distance. And the two teams ahead of them, the Astros and the Rangers, they're two teams that, you know, we didn't really think were going to be that competitive going into the year, not that that means that much. But they're also two very flawed teams in their own way. So it's not like anybody's really running away with the division right now. There's still a lot of time. But, you know, this month and the next month is going to be really important to see what their general manager can do to help them out offensively.
Yeah, your point about the premium on good offensive players these days is spot on. I mean, that's going to be the challenge, is finding that, you know, that guy. And then, you know, and then how willing teams in a division will be to make moves in the division. Like, I think of a Ben Zobrist right now in Oakland. He may well be available. And, you know, there's a nice, flexible guy. You could use him all over. He'd be a kind of a real good fit for this team. But would Oakland make a move with the Angels? You know, those are the tougher questions that just make the puzzle so challenging, I would think, for general managers.
Yeah, and also, Dave, you got to remember, too, the Angels are going to go into next offseason with a lot of holes to fill. We're talking about left field. We're talking about DH. We're talking about catcher. We're talking about potentially second base and third base as well. They're going to want, if they trade for guys, they're going to lean toward getting guys for a controllable path next season. Ben Zobrist, I agree with you. He's a great fit for this team because he's so versatile. He can help you out on defense. He provides a great bat, doesn't strike out too much. But he's going to be a free agent in a couple of months. And I feel like the Angels are going to want to lean towards somebody who's controllable. I think Andre Ethier of the Dodgers makes a lot of sense for them. But the sexy trade that has been thrown out there is T.J. Wilson for Andre Ethier, which actually makes a lot of sense. But you'd have to wait for the Dodgers' outfield situation to get a little bit more healthy. And I don't know if the Dodgers are going to want to aim higher than someone like, maybe they go after a Johnny Cueto, maybe they go after a Cole Hamels. But, I mean, that's a deal that the Angels would like to do, Andre Ethier for C.J. Wilson, if that presents itself. You know, Adam Lind of the Brewers is a guy that I've heard. Brandon Moss of the Indians is another guy. You know, but the thing is, it's hard to pin down anything in specific right now because, as I said, there aren't many teams willing to trade, and in 3 or 4 weeks, that could change dramatically. So that's kind of what they're waiting on right now.
Meanwhile, within the current ranks, Albert Pujols is
you know, on fire. He's up to 18 home runs now as well. Trout with 18 home runs, and he's the only guy who seems to be able to break that Kansas City themed voting in the American League. So you have a couple bats right now that are really doing the job. I guess one of the little tidbits of bad news or disappointing news lately has been the story we continue to watch so closely, which is, you know, Jared Weaver. He was doing so well. He was back on track, and then lately seems to have come back down to earth a little bit.
Yeah, and I think this is just what you can expect from a guy who just doesn't have that stuff that he used to have. He doesn't have that life on his fastball that he used to have. And, you know, we talked about it a lot, Dave, and I know we were both really surprised to see how drastically he had turned his season around. But, you know, the thing about Jared at this stage in his career not being able to rear back and blow a fastball by hitters is, you know, he can't have those levels of sustained dominance because he just has to be so precise. And I think we're starting to see now that he's really getting hurt by the home run ball. You know, this is a guy who, from 2007 to 13, he averaged 20 home runs allowed per season. Last year, that number jumped to 27. This year, that number is 16, which is tied for the major league lead. And mind you, half of Jared Weaver's starts come at Angel Stadium, a place where it's really, really difficult to hit home runs. But that's just, it's because, you know, he needs to be precise with his command, precise with his location, because he has very little margin for error. I still think Jared Weaver's a guy who can give you a chance to win every 5 days. I mean, even on Monday, when he gave up a couple of big home runs to Paul Goldschmidt and Yasmani Tomas, he completed 7 innings for them, and he kind of kept them in the game, except for the fact that the offense couldn't do anything against Robbie Ray. I don't think he's the number one starter in your rotation, maybe not even the number two guy. He's a guy who's going to give you a chance to win every 5 days, though, because he just knows how to get through a game, even if his stuff is not there. But he just doesn't have the stuff to be able to dominate every 5 days. And I think, you know, I think he would admit that too. I mean, he knows where he's at in his career. He knows what he's got to deal with right now. And, you know, and that's just a very small margin for error.
Yeah. That's a real good way of putting it. On the offensive side, you know, we talk about the need for, you know, another bat, somebody to spark this thing. And C.J. Cron, you know, sent down, and we see Daniel Robertson called up. And I don't know that he's the guy. I don't know exactly. What would the expectations be for a guy like Robertson right now to contribute?
Well, you know what, that when Robertson started in the left field yesterday, he became the sixth left fielder who has started for the Angels this year. Not included in that list, by the way, is Josh Hamilton, which I thought was pretty funny. But Dan Robertson's a guy right now who's just up, who will get some starts against left-handed pitching. And I think most importantly, he's a guy who can play all three outfield positions. Because now with Colin Cowgill dealing with that sprained right wrist, Colin Cowgill's a guy, and Mike Socha said it the other day, you don't really realize how important he is until he's not here. He's a guy who, although he doesn't give you his numbers offensively, don't look great. You know, he's a right-handed bat with a little bit of power. He's got good speed, and I think most importantly, he plays really good defense at all three outfield spots. He's the perfect guy to have off your bench. And with him not there, the Angels didn't really have a backup center fielder for Mike Trout. It would have had to been Cole Calhoun sliding over. And they were trying out Cal Kubica, Taylor Featherston. Both of those guys were getting reps in left field. They don't really play the outfield. And I think it was just kind of a snapshot of where the Angels are at right now. It's really interesting because on Sunday, Matt Joyce did not start against a right-hander for the second time all year. The first time he didn't start against a right-hander was because he showed up late to the ballpark and he was benched. It looks like Socha's going in another direction right now. Matt Joyce's batting average is still below 200. He was a guy who, heading into the year, he was going to be counted on to potentially bat cleanup against righties and maybe help ease the pain of not having Josh Hamilton in the lineup. And he just hasn't really been there for them yet. So it looks like Socha has to go in another direction. It looks like what he's leaning toward right now is having Efren Navarro start in left field against righties. And Efren Navarro, he's a guy that maybe a lot of fans outside of the Angels are not familiar with. He was a 50th round drafted by the Angels in 2007. And he's a guy who's just worked so hard through the organization. He does everything right. He's an amazingly good defensive first baseman. He's learned to play the outfield, and he's fine there. And he's a guy who, he doesn't strike out very much. He gives you a competitive bat. He hits the ball the other way. I mean, if you look at his numbers at AAA, they're off the charts. He doesn't bring you a lot of power, but he's a good, solid hitter. And it looks like Socha is just going to see what he can do with this right-handed pitching now. And then on the other side, maybe at DH most of the time, is going to be Kyle Kubica, the guy who we've talked about here as the potential third baseman in 2016. He's up early now because he also just so happens to hit left-handed. And he was also putting up good numbers in the minor leagues. And right now, the Angels will try anything because, you know, as you touched on, C.J. Krohn came up a couple of times. He hasn't been able to get going. Matt Joyce hasn't been able to get going. And that carousel that they've run around to left field, they haven't really been able to find anybody to stick.
Yeah, frustrating times. And right now, really at that point of the season, the fulcrum, if you will, we're going to find out in the next handful of weeks whether this team is going to be able to make that move to make a run. All right, Alvin, great stuff as always. We look forward to the update again next week. Boy, Greg, where do we begin here? Let's spin the wheel. Let's start with the weekend series in Houston. That was a wild one. Of course, it's always wild when you start a series with King Felix tossing out the worst outing in his career, a 10-0 Astros win, and then they whitewash the Astros, and then it goes back again with another blasting 13-0 in the finale. That was as yo-yo a series as I think I've seen in a long time.
And people have been talking about how the Mariners always play one-run games and all this stuff. I guess they just got tired of being close. So they threw out a bunch of blowouts, and it wasn't pretty, certainly on the losing end of two of them. Kind of a tough slap in the face for going into a series. They needed to win, needed to make some noise and kind of start picking up some ground on the Astros, and instead they took it on the chin twice. They've had a tough time, and Houston's kind of a house of horrors for them. Outscored 67-27 over their last nine games, dating back to last September. So 1-8 in those games. So for some reason, they just have a tough time in Houston, and then they certainly did this weekend. And got to turn around. They're 3-3 on the trip as we speak, which doesn't sound so bad, but kind of the way they lost, three shutouts in the last four of those, has been a little tough to take. And they just need to kind of get some traction and start making up some ground. And that's where they're sitting right now, just kind of spinning their wheels, trying to get back into this thing.
Yeah, and of course, then they transition from Houston to San Francisco, get that little interleague 2-2 thing going now. And never easy to play in San Francisco, though got to feel a little bit more like home for this team. One thing that would help a lot, though, would be to get some of those big bats going again. And you know, we had so much fun talking about Nelson Cruz the first couple months of the season, and now it's not as fun a conversation. I mean, granted, it's only been a couple of weeks, but no home runs in like 14 games. You do start asking yourself, what's going on?
Yeah, it's interesting. He's continued to hit well for average, and certainly hasn't fallen off a cliff as far as, you know, he's still one of their productive bats, but he's not hitting over the wall anymore, which is what he'd done certainly the first 6 weeks of the season. He's been kind of stuck on 18 for 2 weeks now, and only two RBIs in the last 14-15 games as well. And that speaks, the fact that he's still hitting and not getting RBIs kind of speaks the fact nobody else much helping out around him, but still got to get that lineup going. He had the back spasms, missed a couple games. McLennan doesn't think that had anything to do with the long run of effect here. He just thinks he's kind of a streak hitter, and he's going to get back on that streak here, which wouldn't surprise me. Watched him taking BP the other day. He's hitting the ball well. Certainly still looks like Nelson Cruz, but they got to get him hitting in the game. And I don't know, maybe you try to carry a team for 6 weeks by yourself, it wears on you a little bit. I still think they need to hit, you know, top to bottom to be successful. They're going to need more than Nelson Cruz, and I think he's going to be okay. He wasn't going to be on that pace forever. Obviously, every guy goes through a little bit. I think it's the weather warms and they go through things. I'm sure he'll end up with a a pretty good number by the end of the season, but it's not going to be 162 homers as we thought. Maybe it'll settle for in the 30 to 40 range, which makes him human, I guess, but a pretty good human, a pretty good guy in the middle of that lineup still.
Yeah, very good human. The back spasms, though, those aren't contagious, right? I saw Trumbo get scratched. He had a little back problem this weekend as well.
Yeah, they missed Trumbo Sunday. He's hoping to get back in the lineup here as soon as he can. Said he hasn't really had a back problem historically, so just kind of something that grabbed him when he was swinging in the cage before the game, and they had to scratch him. And he's an interesting case, and they brought him in here hoping that he could help out a little bit, and he hasn't hit yet. He's only played 9 games, but just hasn't really hit much for him yet, and they need to get him going because he was, they made that move to try to bolster that lineup a little bit, and I suspect it will help more down the road than it has. But he's one of those guys that's got to get going, and that's that group is not inclusive to one. It's a group of guys that got to get going.
I know it's cliche to even bring it up, Greg, but it's one of those things with Seattle. I think certainly people in the Pacific Northwest get it, but the distance that this team has to travel over the course of a regular season is just, it is a phenomenal number of miles and hours on a plane. And the reality is it does take its toll. I know it's early, and I know you can't draw a straight line between, a couple of guys having a little back trouble for a week and all the long travel. And it's probably difficult to quantify, but don't you, somewhere deep inside, Greg, don't you believe that all the travel has a real physical toll on this team over time?
Yeah, it's a tough one because the last thing any major league player, manager, coach, fan wants to hear is an excuse, and that's not one they like to talk about too much. So they try to make things as good as they can. They obviously fly on a nice plane, do things as well as they can. They do travel more than twice as much as a lot of teams in the Midwest, but there are teams on the other teams on the West Coast, the A's and Giants, and those teams, they travel a lot as well. Maybe not quite as far as Seattle. There's no real close trips for Seattle. That's one thing. They don't have any quick hop. It's every time they get on a plane, it's a pretty good jaunt for them. But I don't know. They've had good teams here in the past. Certainly, when they won 116 games in 2001, nobody was worried about the travel. So, you got to do it out on the field. Guys have, they'll tell you when you get to Seattle, if you played somewhere else, it does take a little adjustment. You kind of sleep sometimes a little different patterns. You got to maybe eat a little different, do some things to stay strong. I don't think that's not a reason they're not hitting. I won't buy that, and I don't think they do as well. I mean, that's just something you got to adjust to as a professional, and every job he has a challenge here or there. I don't think that's a huge one. I think it is something you have to be aware of, certainly. I know I travel with them. I get tired, but I think most people do, and their jobs have some things that they deal with. And maybe it's a back problem for somebody that if you have a back problem and you have to get on a plane and sit for 5 hours, that's not easy. I think we all know that. But if that's I don't know that that's why a couple of guys have had back spasms. I think that's more of a coincidence. That's certainly not an overriding problem they've had over the years. I do know some. Over in the past, there's been a couple guys that have had a back problem when they had to get on that plane. That's going to have to do some special things to get ready for this trip and move around a little bit on the plane and do some things. But they're big boys; they can handle it, and that's certainly just one of the things they got to deal with.
Yeah, I suppose. Like maybe just Bruce Bochy in San Francisco talking about it this week that kind of triggered the thought. And back, when I think of long flights, I think of my aching back and. But in any case, moving forward, some good news. I love the way baseball has moved in this direction. But, the draft was a week ago. And, the Mariners have already signed a couple of their top picks. And, you can start thinking about getting guys off on assignments and developing and moving their way up. And I love that aspect of the game now. And I think it's always great to see a team like the Mariners. And there are several others out there that have been aggressive and gotten guys signed quickly.
Sure. It helps. I mean, if you have a guy that gets drafted and he doesn't sign, for a few months, you kind of miss that first year kind of. And they did. They've signed Nick Neidert, who is their first-round pick, high school kid out of Georgia, has signed. And he's going to be assigned to the Arizona League team to get going, and Andrew Moore, who's their second pick, was a Oregon State pitcher, and he's going to report to Everett just to start their short season A ball here this week. So, yeah, get the top two guys right into it. Yeah, it does help. I mean, it gives you a good start on that first year, and you get a few months under your belt of pro ball, and it brings guys in better position as they hit that second season to have some time under their belt as they get rolling. And again, it's definitely a factor.
Yeah, no doubt. Any surprises as far as you were concerned with that draft, or did it go about it as you thought it might?
Well, when you don't pick till 60th, it's all a surprise to me because I don't claim to know who the top 100 ball players and coming out of the draft are. But they went pitching a little heavy, and which doesn't surprise me because as much as their pitching is good at the major league level, that it is an organizational need. They've dealt some of their young arms and moved up some of those guys. They need to restock that group. So, three, 4 years down the road, they got kids coming up that caliber. They drafted five high school pitchers pretty high, and they like that group. It's a group you never know with high school pitchers, but they like what they got, and that's a group they'd like to see move forward together and be a pretty strong group. They added in some high school arms and obviously some decent position players. They like what they got considering where they drafted, you never know with those for a few years, but we'll see how they develop.
Well, now if they could just get some of those guys hitting again, maybe get this team back closer to 500 perhaps by the All-Star break, that would be a good plan. But I guess the good news is they're out of Houston for the time being. Greg, always fun. And I know Houston's coming to Seattle, though, soon, so buckle in.
Yeah, another chance, three more with them back home in Seattle this coming weekend. So that'll be a big series as well. And certainly, if you want to circle a pretty interesting date on the calendar, the Mariners open this next homestand Wednesday with Felix Hernandez against Madison Bumgarner on the hill for the Giants on Wednesday. So that's one to watch certainly coming up. So they'll keep playing, and they definitely have a nice homestand coming up here and could make some noise with the Royals coming in at the end of it. So pretty good test for them, and some good teams coming into town.
James Hadley, here we are again. What are we? Mid-June. And I think, like with each week, we usually sign off with some sort of hope or plea that, next week we'll be talking about the 6-game winning streak or something along those lines. And it hasn't quite materialized. And it's looking like that may be a bit of a pipe dream here. I'm not sure that we can put our finger on why, but it seems like it's just business as usual day in, day out with this team. And it's surprising that it's the type of business we're talking about, the continued struggles of the Oakland A's. Do you see it turning around anytime?
I don't. I think, there were such great expectations for this team coming into the season, and that's why, week in and week out, there was hope, within the team and, around it that things would get better. And unfortunately, I think, things have been status quo, and I think we're just going to continue to see that. And, maybe with a different group of guys as well. I do see them, trading some guys that will be free agents at the end of the season. Ben Zobrist, I could really see him being dealt quickly. He's kind of taking up offensively finally since coming back from knee surgery. And he's that type of player that could really help, a team just in need of a pick-me-up, and his versatility is obviously significant. Really just the perfect trade chip. I think the A's are kind of hoping, well, if they can trade him sooner than later, a club gets maybe an extra month of a guy like him before the trade deadline, then maybe his trade value is even that much more significant. And he's not the only one. I mean, they could deal Tyler Clippard. Scott Kazmir, of course, is going to be on a lot of teams' radars. Just teams in need of that one pitcher like the A's needed last year when they got not only Samardzija but Lester. So, I think changes are coming, and probably not the changes A's fans want to see, but I think, it's at that point where they just can't sit around and wait for things to get better anymore, because clearly they're not. For some time it was about, when they get fully healthy and when this happens, and that happens, and it's just, you know, they have Coco Crisp and Sean Doolittle out for a lengthy period of time. I mean, we won't be seeing those guys the rest of the first half, probably not until August at the earliest. So I think for them to, you know, just kind of hope at this point, you know, probably they probably know that, you know, at this point the team is what it is. The talent level is just not what they, you know, thought it would be. And, you know, they are going to have to make some moves just because, you know, realistically, I don't foresee them, you know, being contenders in that division.
Yeah, it's been a long, long time, though, Jane. I feel like since, you know, since we've been able to write off an A's team, you know, this early, I feel like they always find a way to be in it. But it is looking tougher and tougher for this team. They just dug themselves too big a hole. And so then, not to say that they're sideshows or anything like that, but you do start looking at other things to, you know, grab your interest, keep your interest. And Pat Benedetti, you know, it was a really neat story. I mean, here's this ambidextrous pitcher, first one since the late 1800s. And, you know, what a thrill. What an exciting, interesting thing to watch. But he's hurt. And, of course, it just creates additional bizarre side stories, right? Which is, if a guy can throw with either arm, how can he really be hurt if it's just, you know, the left side or the right side? Can he just keep throwing? So, I don't know. Can you sort it out for us?
I mean, that, it really is the story of how the A season is going to, you know, have Vendetti come up and to see him do well in just a weekend. You know, he's on the DL. But, you know, back to what you were talking about, so he does have a right shoulder strain, and, you know, you get the questions all the time, well, can he just pitch with his left hand? And there's several reasons why they put him on the DL. You know, first and foremost, when he was throwing left-handed, he can still feel it. It was still affecting him from the left side. So, you know, that was a concern. They want to get him fully healthy. And second, well, he has said from the very beginning, you know, he can only be successful in the big leagues with both arms. And that seems crazy, but he knows, you know, he doesn't have that overpowering stuff from either side. So for him to be effective, he really needs that matchup advantage, you know, that left-on-left, right-on-right advantage. And when he doesn't have that, he's really just not as effective. And he'll be the first one to admit that he knows that, you know, being ambidextrous is what has gotten him this far. And there was a point in his career he actually had surgery on the same shoulder back in 2012, I believe. And, you know, they kind of, he was in the Yankees organization at the time, and they kind of bounced around the idea of him, you know, strictly throwing left-handed, and it just didn't work because he knows that, you know, he really does need that advantage. So that was another reason. But, you know, the main reason they did put him on the DL and not try to just throw him out there left-handed was because the right shoulder was still affecting him left-handed. And, I mean, they don't want to mess around with this guy. You know, I know it pained them to put him on the DL. I think everyone just felt so bad for this guy. He waits, you know, 8 seasons to get his first call to the big leagues, and he goes on the DL right away. But I think they're hoping they caught this early, and it's not something that's too serious, and they just want to get him fully healthy before bringing him back.
What was the reaction like, you know, among baseball people, whether they be, you know, friends of yours up there in the press box, or, you know, the baseball personnel you talked to with Oakland or scouts, or what was the interest level like and people's reaction to seeing him throw in the big leagues?
It's funny because for me, I've seen this in spring training, and so while it never gets old for me, you know, watching people watch him for the first time is really entertaining. We were in you know, Boston when he got the call up, and even just when he's in the bullpen warming up, you know, you'll hear whispers, wait, he just switched to the other side. Now he's throwing with his other arm. And, you know, he'll come out to the mound and do the same thing. You know, he throws equal amount of warm-up pitches from both sides, and to see him turn around like that and see people's reactions, it's really kind of cool. And, you know, like I said, I could watch it, you know, every day and still not tire of seeing it. I mean, it's truly remarkable. I mean, it's hard enough, you know, to pitch at the big league level with one arm, and the fact he can do it with both, it's, you know, it's not a gimmick. I mean, clearly he, you know, like I was mentioning before, he needs this to be able to be at this level, but it's just, it's amazing. It really is. And he's such a good guy on top of it. Just the type of guy you want to root for too. So everything, it was just a very cool story, and hopefully he's back soon.
Yeah, yeah. Well, competitively, it's interesting too, I'm sure, to talk to guys and see what their reactions are on the field to his stuff and that kind of thing. But I wanted to move to the draft real quick. Any surprises at the direction the A's went with the draft this year? And I know they've already locked up a couple of their higher picks. They did go pretty college heavy though this year in the draft.
They did, and I asked about that, and you know, they're typically college heavy, but this year very, very much so. I believe it was 35 of their 40 picks came from the collegiate level, and you know, I think part of that was a product of the draft. You know, I'm not sure that the talent at the high school level this year was you know, truly great, and I think that, you know, they recognize that. And you know, even though they mentioned there were some high school guys that were on their radar and, you know, just kind of slipped from them. And so it just kind of ended up this way where they came away with so many, you know, collegiate players. But, you know, for a team that, you know, its system has been lacking, especially, you know, you look at the past year, the type of guys they've traded away, Addison Russell, Daniel Robertson, I mean, Billy McKinney, a lot of their top prospects have been gone in trades, and so their system's kind of been depleted. So to not only bring in, you know, a new group of guys, but guys that can help, you know, at the big league level, hopefully sooner than later, I think that's important to them. You know, these are polished players that, you know, hopefully, you know, they foresee going through the system quickly. And, you know, the fact that, you know, you see their top two picks are collegiate shortstops, you know, that's, I think, you know, it may be a coincidence, but also at the same time, I do think it was necessary for their system.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Jane, as we wrap up this week and look forward to that silver lining next week, I leave you with this thought. You get a couple of gorgeous days in San Diego, no doubt, but then the team comes home for 15 of their next 18 at the Coliseum, and maybe if there's any point in this season when they will get their legs underneath them, turn things around, get back toward approaching 500. Maybe we're on the cusp of that little stretch, and we'll be discussing it next week.
Sounds good. I hope so.
And there you go. That's all we can do this week. Everything you needed to know in this week's edition, MLB.com Extras, the American League West.